Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Armchair Survivalist. My name is Kurt Wilson. I'm the Armchair Survivalist, and it is now July 5th in the year 2020. I hope you all had a safe and fun 4th of July. And I hope you didn't have to put up with too much communist activity from the Democrats destroying everything around you. Anyway, welcome to my show. Go to armchairsurvivalist.com and scroll down, and you'll see all the different ways you can listen to me. Obviously, you know at least one way because you're listening to me. But I'm on a whole bunch of different apps like Stitcher and iHeartRadio, Anchor, Podbeam, YouTube. I'm on YouTube. My RSS feed is there. I'm on Global Star Satellite, three, and sometimes the five. And you can find me, Galaxy 19, transponder 5KU, band frequency 11836, symbol rate 20.765. You just, as you scroll down, you get to the bottom, you'll see the little satellite dish sweeping back and forth. There's a 24/7 live feed there. You can click on that, listen to Global Star 3 live anytime you want. You can listen in my chat room. And again, armchairsurvivalist.com, and you'll see the chat room link at the top of the page. You can listen on your phone. It's not toll-free. It's 641-741-0371. So if you want to listen on your phone, it's 641 area code, 741-0371. Now, if you miss the show and you just, you know, a couple hours and you're too late, and you go, ah, crap, I want to hear what he said. Well, there is a link there that says click here to listen to the latest show of the Armchair Survivalist. Do that, and you'll hear the latest show. Now, if you want to listen to any of my earlier shows of the current year, on the left-hand side of every page at armchairsurvivalist.com is a little white nipper dog listening to the RCA Victor gramophone. You just click on that. It'll take you over to a page that says, coincidentally, the Armchair Survivalist Past Shows. Pick one you want to listen to, click on it, download it, listen to it, then whatever. Now, also, every show I do, I post my show notes. Sometimes I'm a little slow in getting them up because I am a one-man band and we're real busy here at Survival Enterprises. We're not making a lot of money, but we're busy. Yes, sometimes it works that way. But you go to the show notes page. It says show notes and archive. And you just look for a show like, say, January 12th, Lugol's Iodine. Okay, you click on that, and that'll take you to that show's page. And that show has all kinds of links, everything I talked about, everything that is important. I have the links to it right there. So, you know, you don't have to just listen to me and say, I wonder if he's telling the truth, or I wonder if he knows what the hell he's talking about. Well, I do. You can go there and find out and prove it yourself. All right, now we're going to get into the economy. Major not accepting cash now. Well, at the self-checkouts, and as a matter of fact, Home Depot and Walmart are putting warnings up as well. What's happening is there's a coin shortage. People are not spending their coins, so they're holding the coins, so they're not getting out into the public, so people aren't being able to get change. So you just a word of warning, you guys, when you go out shopping, and I've said this to you for, I don't know, 25 years, carry cash with you. And if you carry cash, carry some change with you, because a lot of these places now, only exact change. Now, we're under the economy, so all of these things are going to affect you one way or the other. An Amazon driver, this is a guy who got hired by Amazon to deliver stuff people buy from Amazon, and he decided he's had enough working. I mean, you're told, this is what you're going to do, this is how long you're going to work, this is how much you're going to get paid. And he got fed up because he just couldn't keep working 13 hours a day for that company. So he quit in a unique manner. He parked the van, left the keys in the ignition, and walked away. And then posted it on Twitter, I quit. I left the van 12 miles south. You can have it. And it's full of gas with the keys in the ignition. What a great, honorable, intelligent millennial, isn't he? I couldn't believe that when I saw that. The Chinese are putting out all kinds of software, you know that. And what's being found is that all the software designed, developed, and sold by China has back doors so that they can get into it and see what's going on. They can steal information. This is a big thing, and Trump is really getting hot on this now because Chinese phone equipment, Chinese switching equipment, internet equipment, almost all of it has some type of back door on it so that the Chinese can perform their intelligence gathering on anyone. And if that's not bad enough, you know, Google has a browser called Chrome. Chrome is an open back door. Massive spying is happening on users of Chrome. And this is well known now. I don't know what's going on. This is asinine. It's almost as if there's a big giant conspiracy, isn't there, between all the communists out there, of which Google is definitely part of that. All right, let's get into food and health. Food, health, both things, right off the bat. You know, all of these communist governors have decided on these new creatures they're hiring called tracers. So these tracers are going to find out who has the disease, whatever the disease of the day is. I think it's COVID-19 now. And then they'll order you to self-quarantine, blah, 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 blah. People in New York County are telling these tracers to go to hell when they come to talk to them. They say, yeah, you were at a party with Fred, and Fred showed up positive, so we want to talk to you about that. And they just tell them, go to hell. So New York County is now issuing subpoenas to force people to talk to them. That subpoena's never gotten away of me. God, that's asinine. You like your chicken McNuggets? 60,000 pounds of them have been recalled because, well, they had rubber in them. Not for McDonald's, mind you. This is a recall. I'm reading this recall. I'm a quote-unquote member of the Department of Homeland Security, so I get all kinds of information, and I look at the FDA is the big one now, and I'm seeing all these different recalls. And sometimes they're not very clear unless you dig down, and I don't want to waste the time. Pilgrim's Pride Corporation of Waco, Texas. And these are four-pound bags of Pilgrim's fully cooked chicken breast nuggets. You know the Ice Age farmer? I've had a clip on him now and then, many times. And I've been following this artificial intelligence, these programmings that are being created, this software that's being created worldwide on tracking people. And I don't put it all together agriculturally like he does. This is going to raise the hairs in the back of your neck.
Over the past few months of this pandemic, there has been a narrative that's been played out in front of us. And at first glance, it seems like there is an attack going on our food system, and then there are forces at work trying to defend against that attack. For example, setting aside briefly everything about the virus, everything about the faulty tests, everything about the response, just put aside everything except look with me at the way that this narrative has played out. First, we heard that there were infections at the meat plants, and so they were shutting down production of meat. In response, the Trump administration drafted Executive Order 13917 and invoked the Defense Production Act, which allows the federal government to take total control over the production, transportation, and distribution of any resource they deem essential for the national defense. Then we started to hear noises about how there were infections on farms, and so we need to impose social distancing on our harvest workers and within all of the farm labor, which is really devastating, especially to small farm operations. It's unthinkable, actually. And again, in response, the USDA and the FDA drafted a memorandum of understanding which merged their oversight. So not just the meat anymore, but now all agriculture, all crop production, suddenly all of this is covered by the newly expanded scope of the freshly invoked Defense Production Act. In other words, yes, the federal government just took total control over all food production and over all food transportation and distribution. This has happened now. This is on the books, and it's being used actively. Then we saw, because the companies themselves were forced to stay open, then we saw it became an AstroTurf campaign, a fake grassroots campaign about workers' rights. So we saw United Farm Workers and the media companies conspiring to tell farm workers that it was way too unsafe for them to go to work anymore. They started suing the states, and even some governors like Jay Inslee rolled over and said, yeah, these guys are right. It's way too dangerous for us to go harvest our apples this year. we're just going to let them rot. We also saw sites like workingattyson.com appear overnight, sponsored by the big media companies and by the labor unions. And they make the case that it's way too dangerous for you to go to work at Tyson right now. And as a direct result of this campaign and all this fear, the meat companies are reporting that only 50% of their workers are even showing up to work right now. So they're shut down even though the DPA was invoked and they were supposed to stay open. The attack on our food system is real. It's a real attack. But again, seemingly in response, the U.S. Department of Defense rolled out publicly their Project Salus, an artificial intelligence system that, in their words, would be helpful. It would help to detect problem areas in the supply chain where there might be shortages or new COVID-19 hotspots. They have a million reasons that it's very helpful for public safety that they're bringing in this new AI system, and they're feeding every grocery retail transaction into it. In fact, in the press release about Project Salus, it was revealed that this was, yes, part of their command and control massive AI weapons system, because food is absolutely being plugged into their military controls. I'd like to make the case that this isn't a natural problem reaction chain of events here. In fact, this is one integrated column, one agenda being executed without material opposition, unfortunately. As they are shutting down the food production, they are also taking total control over it at the same time. There's no one actually trying to maintain our food sovereignty here. And so over the course of these last few months, not only has our food production been shut down substantially, but the federal government has literally taken total control over that supply chain. Now I want to look briefly at a different supply chain. It seems completely orthogonal to my conversation today, but in fact, it's informative. And that's the defense supply chain, because over the course of the last few months during the pandemic, there's been another narrative that's been pushed out to the Mockingbird media, and that is about the fact that our military depends on a tremendous network of suppliers and a supply chain all to themselves, and that was affected by COVID-19. And oh boy, what are we going to do about that? So here, starting back in March, what happens when COVID-19 infiltrates the defense supply chain? What are we going to do? In April, that continued as the economy started to feel the effects. The Pentagon's supply chain is now facing an economy under siege. You can already see there's a problem being posited here, so that it needs a reaction. How is the Pentagon protecting defense supply chains from COVID-19? Well, we start to see indications that they're looking at blockchain technology. And the DOD, this narrative is continuing. The DOD must brace for long-term supply chain problems. There's going to be big holes. The U.S. needs to rethink its overseas supply chain, because flashing back, this is not news. No surprise here, U.S. defense supply chain is heavily reliant on China and other rivals, according to a 2018 report. Just like we depended on China for our pharmaceutical ingredients, and now we have Zoloft shortages and antibiotic shortages. Facing these challenges to the supply chain, and in the course of this pandemic crisis, May 20th, 2020, U.S. military is falling behind China and Russia in our blockchain arms race. Well, we can't have a blockchain gap. And so, how does the military responding to these problems that they're putting out there? Well, we see it. The Navy is raising the anchor on blockchain. The Army is hosting symposiums on blockchain technology. And just this month, the U.S. Air Force has commissioned, for the price of $1.5 million, a blockchain-based supply chain network. By SymbaChain, a blockchain as a service company with deep ties to the DOD. Now they're being given $1.5 million to develop a blockchain for supply chain logistics for the U.S. Air Force. We might be able to anticipate and identify areas in the supply chain that could one day break down. You see, this is the response to that problem that they were just telling us that we have. We depend on things that might be shutting down because of the virus or because it's China. We'll use blockchain and AI. Yeah, these things from China, they might be transistors or microprocessors. We want to be able to trace where every screw and every microprocessor in our planes came from, so that if we ever have any problem, we can trace it back to every component, we can find wherever else they go, every other plane, we can take it out of service. You can see the case they're making for this. He said also that they carry out their supply chains in ways that civilians, quote, don't even take into consideration. Now, this is just not true anymore, because everything I've just told you about the defense supply chain is rolling out also for the civilian supply chain. That's not a surprise. right? That's why Project Salus, into which they're feeding our grocery transactions, is actually a part of their AI weapons system, because they want total information awareness. Let's look now at the civilian supply chain. How the Internet of Things, AI, and the blockchain can transform our supply chain in three simple steps. Quote, the most significant transformation opportunity in managing supply chains will be the ability to know the past, present, and future of every asset across the entire supply chain. To do that, we need three core things. This is the architecture of the beast system, ladies and gentlemen. We need one. Every asset has to have a name. It's got to have a unique identifier so that that coffee bean is number 24601 or whatever it is. We need each coffee bean also to have connectivity so that they can talk to each other. And then we need this to happen automatically. These are the three pillars of the new beast system that they're describing here. We're talking about knowledge about every piece of any physical product, where it came from, what it's made of, and to give a little more color on those three parts, on that architecture. Number one, identity. First off, we need to be able to provide every part and every asset across the supply chain with its own unique identification. As soon as we manufacture any component, as soon as we pick any coffee bean, we will tag it with its unique digital identifier. But it's not that easy. You know, we can't just throw an RFID on everything. Like, think about a fish, for example. And I'll just pause to make sure it's very clear. We're talking about coffee beans and fish. This is food, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about taking total control over food. Consider that fish. You're about to buy a fillet of fish, but you want to know, was it sustainably farmed? Yada, yada, yada. We're from the government. We're here to help. To provide you for that, we need to be able to track the fish as it changes shape across the supply chain. If you bought the whole fish, well, that'd be kind of easy. Maybe there's just a tag on it. But you bought just a fillet. So now we need to provide each part of that fish with its own unique digital identifier as it changes shape. Additionally, now that we've got every single piece of that fish with its own ID, they've also got to be able to talk to each other. That was the second pillar, connectivity. And what works for your phone may not work for that fish. That's a different problem we're going to have to solve. Don't worry, they've got that covered too. That's 5G, right? So let's start with how they're going to provide identification for everything. And this is the blockchain. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the blockchain of food. And it's something that's been talked about for a long time, years actually, before the pandemic. How blockchain technology could transform the food industry. This is from 2017. Well, there's been a lot of noise about Bitcoin. You may have heard about that crazy Bitcoin. But actually, we can use cryptocurrency, the blockchain underneath it, to drastically make a revolution in food safety is sort of the narrative. That's how they're selling it here. Here's a report from Accenture, one of the big consulting firms. And here's a report from Deloitte in 2016, another of the big consulting firms, just to make it clear that it's been years in the works and there's big money behind this. In fact, Walmart has already done a pilot starting in 2016 from Bloomberg. Walmart tackles food safety with a trial of blockchain technology. Walmart actually worked with IBM to launch their Blockchain Food Safety Alliance. And they did so in China. And I'll let them, in their own words, describe what they're building.
What we hope to do with blockchain is bring all food safety system stakeholders and collaborate so that we do it one best way. We can do it very quickly and efficiently. Blockchain is a digital ledger that allows different segments of the food system to capture information about the product, what they've done to it, where that product has been. If we're linking that data with other data points, the Internet of Things, all that information will yield to insights that will allow us to have a safer, more affordable, and sustainable food system. But we don't believe traceability is the goal. We believe that transparency is the ultimate goal. Blockchain will give us the ability to not only track where food came from, but how it was produced. Was it produced safely? Was it produced responsibly? Is it sustainably grown? How many dates of shelf life are left on that product? The food system is a shared responsibility. And for blockchain and traceability and transparency to work, we need a lot of people working together. And so we're excited to be working with IBM on this blockchain initiative.
There you have it. Two firms, Walmart with its deep ties to the Defense Department, and IBM, who literally ran the computers at the Nazi death camps, are now working together for the blockchain for your public safety. Doesn't that make you feel good? Really nice that these philanthropists are working so hard to keep our food healthy. you see what's going on. You see the narrative they're selling here. And of course, during this plandemic, they've gone, as they have across the entire agenda, pedal to the metal with this building resilient food supply chains in the face of COVID-19. Many new partners have signed on to IBM's food safety blockchain across the world. It's growing in the food industry during COVID-19. And that's how they intend to give every piece, every coffee bean, every little thing its own identifier and track it throughout the supply chain. Connectivity, I already sort of tipped the hat here too. That is 5G. That's why they need little 5G transmission devices every 100 feet or wherever it is. That's this huge grid so that they can track those little pieces of fish which don't have active power on them. And that's why this is being pushed out so hard right now as well. We see Trump making sure to explicitly include it in his stimulus bill, trillions of dollars, including 5G, all rolling out right now. FCC passes a 5G upgrade order aimed at lifting rural broadband. It's extremely important to them that they roll out this 5G connectivity out to the farms where those crops are picked so that we can immediately get them identifiers, right? You see, they're building this total information awareness grid. This is the architecture of the beast system. Now that we can track each coffee bean, and now that those coffee beans can report in from anywhere they go over 5G, how are we going to manage all this data? What are we going to do with it all? Well, that's where artificial intelligence comes in. And I do want to bring up this article. This is when the Pentagon publicly unveiled Project Salus, the artificial intelligence system that they said was going to detect COVID-19 hotspots and predict shortages. But again, as you read down at the very end of the article, in fact, we can confirm that Project Salus is part of this JADC2 prototype, the Joint All-Domain Command and Control System, a massive effort to digitally interlink weapons, vehicles, and personnel. Yes, it's an AI weapons system that the Pentagon is building and into which they're now feeding our grocery retail transactions. And certainly not that by a long shot. They've been expanding the supply chain pilot ever since that initial article a couple months ago, and it's been appalling just how voluntarily compliant, just how quickly Walmart and Kroger and Whole Foods and Amazon and all of these major retailers have acquiesced to the Pentagon's requests to give them all of their data. So now it's all of the distribution internally of where all these assets are moving, not just what you're buying from the grocery store. All of this is being fed into the Pentagon's weapons system AI. Project Salus, a data aggregation platform using predictive modeling, was used to make sure frontline workers can get their personal protective equipment. You see, it's always the selling point. Oh, we're from the government. We're here to help. Forget about that weapons system line. We just want to make sure you get safe food and personal protective equipment. Salus, which has focused mostly on the supply chain, is now being expanded to more generalized problems and future pandemic modeling efforts. Yeah, because once you build an AI system, you can apply it to whatever you want. And of course, the Pentagon has been very loud. The Joint Artificial Intelligence Center, with whom Eric Schmidt, the former CEO of Google Alphabet, has now left public life to go focus on military defense technologies and the big AI they're building. The outgoing director just mentioned that, well, now that we're funding $3 trillion stimulus bills for coronavirus, probably there's going to be some defense budget cuts. And because of that, we're going to have to go hard on AI now and other emerging technologies, including software, AI, and 5G-enabled capacities. You see, it's all rolled together. This is one integrated agenda. I want to mention a couple other new AI applications that are being sold on the market. These are startup companies that are deploying machine learning AI techniques to the market in order to get even more data. They just happen to have been selected by the World Economic Forum, the same group, yes, behind your digital known traveler identification, which tracks everywhere you go and everything you do and your social credit score and whether or not you should be allowed to stay at this country for however long or even let in or, you know, when you check into a hotel. All of that they propose will be rolled into this blockchain about everything you do. You see, in fact, this is the same thing applied to everything, to the supply chain. That's why I wanted to make it very clear that this is the beast system. It's rolling out not just for you to control you, but across the entire supply chain. It's across everything, all resources. So that same World Economic Forum has chosen the following companies as their technology pioneers for 2020. There's a whole host of them, and I'll mention three. Number one, Brightseed, a company that is using artificial intelligence to catalog the entire plant kingdom and identify new nutrient sources with high potential impact. In other words, we're going to use genomic mapping to understand the genetics of every plant on Earth. This is the AI taking total control over the entire natural kingdom, and then they'll be able to use CRISPR technologies to do slight gene modifications and then patent the results. So there will be no natural genetics anymore. They're taking ownership of the genetics. That's what Brightseed is actually doing. And of course, if you're going to eliminate natural food sources, then you're going to have to engineer some fake, nasty synthetic food. That's what they're involved in. Here's another one, Trace Genomics. We expand artificial intelligence and machine learning into your soil. So now we've got our AI taking your seeds. We have it looking into your soil. You can see it's really going straight into the food production. I'm going to skip straight to this one, which is a doozy. This, again, a World Economic Forum Technology Pioneer 2020 called Phylogen. Ladies and gentlemen, let's say that you're growing food, and let's say you don't like the beast system. You'd like to opt out of it. And maybe you grow some green beans, and you eat them, and everything's fine. But then one day you share some green beans with your neighbor, and he takes them out to a potluck, but he gets pulled over on the way, and a policeman takes those green beans, and they say, wait a minute, there's no RFID, there's no blockchain, there's no 5G on these green beans. Where did they come from? What's going on here? Where did you get these green beans? These are black market green beans. Don't worry, because the beast system obviously includes some method to plug that gap, to make sure that they have total control. They're not taking any chances with your green beans. No. Phylogen has developed a technology called microbial forensics, which can literally take that green bean and they can look at the microbiome, the little bits of bacteria and yeasts and whatever else is on that green bean. And they can look deeply at that. And because it's like a unique identifier, every place on the planet has its own. You know how you can do a sourdough starter where you live and just pull the yeasts out of the air? Well, there are different combinations of yeasts and bacteria and ambient things everywhere in the world. So unique, in fact, that Phylogen's microbiome forensics technology is able, look at this, to provide unparalleled insights about your global supply chain. We can trace goods and materials to locations of origins, like exact factories, exact farms, or exact warehouses. So suddenly, that green bean can be tied back to your farm. Even if you didn't put it into the blockchain, now that black market green bean can lead them right back to you. It's appalling, this technology. And it's very amazing. I mean, I'll give it to them. It's an astounding piece of technology. But it is decidedly in the wrong hands right now. And it's being used to further their complete control over everything about the supply chain. That's why the same World Economic Forum that's sponsoring this entire agenda has chosen Phylogen as one of their partners here, as one of their tech pioneers. Because they want transparency, which means total information awareness, means total control over the global supply chains. Now, I mentioned that the Defense Production Act was invoked and that the government has been flexing their muscles behind the scenes already during this pandemic. And part of that looks like forcing big companies to radically start retooling their infrastructures to support online ordering, to prefer, in fact, online ordering and curbside pickup. But now we're starting to see in the last few weeks some of the public rollout of these announcements. So I'm glad to share. Walmart's Sam's Club is launching curbside pickup nationwide. You don't get to go in the store anymore. You don't even, maybe you just get to order meat and they'll put in whatever they have. And if it's fake meat, well, here's your bag. Sorry, Buster. That's what we got today. Take it or leave it. Oh, you don't like the salad you got? It's got brown leaves. Sorry, you've already driven off by now. You don't get to go play with our food in our store anymore. Now, this is the new model. Online ordering, curbside pickup. It's been pushed by the government right now. Consumers are overwhelmingly loving curbside pickup, according to Forbes, putting out that narrative, as Aldi is expanding its curbside grocery pickups as well, major grocers, as Starbucks is closing 400 of their stores, but launching curbside pickup, as Bob Evans closes some of their seats, but launches curbside pickup at every single restaurant. You can see that all of these companies are launching this across the board right now at the same time. It's not like they all came to the same conclusion. This is an orchestrated effort that's being rolled out here right now. All of this is part of that architecture of the global beast system, the perfect information awareness of every asset throughout these new supply chains, because the old one's broken, right? Plandemic. People couldn't get their food. There are meat shortages. So we had to build the beast system. It integrates, obviously, with the same system that they're building, their digital known traveler identification, the digital passport blockchain. It's the same thing. It's the same technology. Just apply. This is contact tracing for vegetables now.
All right, so you know all of these loyalty cards, like Safeway, you get this card, you fill out this form, and you get this card at, for Safeway, and you, if they have a sale on, you get 10% off special if you have the card. Those are called loyalty cards. Here's what my recommendation is. You get all new loyalty cards, you make up a name, you make up all the data, and you put it on there. You don't give them a phone number, you don't give them your email address, and you don't give them your driver's license. You don't do any of that crap. You make it up. You lie. So you're still going to get the discount, but it's going to be some fruitcake name. Safeway, Fred Meyer, Albertsons, I don't care who. The only one you can't fake is Costco. All of that information, you know what's funny? I came out with this info. This is 10 years old. All of this information is being tracked by the National Security Agency. At least all of this information. And they take records, regional records, of how much milk is bought all through these areas. I've had clerks, many clerks say, well, no, nothing's on sale that you're buying, but why don't you let me use your card anyway? That's because they've been told the data needs to be accumulated to find out exactly how to order and how much meat is going into one region, how much baby food is going into one region. And the people gathering this data can determine exactly how much food or other items in the supply chain should go to specific areas. And if you're dumb enough to have your real name attached to these things, well, that goes in your file. How much milk is Kurt buying? How much dog food is Kurt buying? Oh, look, Kurt buying cat food. He must have a cat now. Oh, look, he's buying monkey food. Well, he's either mad at his wife or he's got a monkey now. So this is data. You don't need to make it easy for him. I don't. I piss him off. I make it hard as hell to get information on me. Of course, all they have to do is listen, but you know these agents don't want to listen to this stuff. All right, now we're going to get into the Trump category. I'm going to read directly from the Department of Homeland Security's website. Department of Homeland Security announces new task force to protect American monuments, memorials, and statues. Today, Acting Secretary of Homeland Security Chad Wolf announced the establishment of the DHS Protecting America Communities Task Force, PACT, a special task force to coordinate departmental law enforcement agency assets in protecting our nation's historic monuments, memorials, statues, and federal facilities. So all of the above type thing. This obviously is in response to the psychosis of the communists. See, the reason all of these statues are being torn down, the reason that the communists want, and you understand when I say communists, I mean anyone who isn't a Republican, and even some Republicans are communists. Democrats are communists. No ifs, ands, or buts. So they're out there saying, well, we want to tear down these statues. We want to change the name of this, change the name of that. And we're going to do it whether you want it done or not. Well, sorry, Department of Homeland Security says, no, you're not doing that. As a matter of fact, Attorney General Barr created a special task force to go after these guys after they've committed their crimes. And he's going to take down these people. He's that's it. You know, these Antifa members, these moron white people who think that they're black, so they're out there promoting Black Lives Matter. Do you know less than 15% of all of these riots and all of the protests are black people? It's these propagandized communist whites that are out there doing this. Anyway, he's going after these people now. In fact, Trump decided to help him, so he tweeted out 15 separate posters of persons of interest. And these are the low-life scum that have been damaging my statues that are out there. They're yours, they're mine, they're public. And these people are doing damage. General Flynn comes out and he said, look, if we don't act and get something going, 2% of the people in the United States are going to be controlling the other 98%. And that's exactly what's happened. And you can see this. You can see it. You can see this communist psychotic horse crap that's been going on in the past few months. It's actually worldwide. And you can see the complicit communists going along with them. All of the corporations that are going along with them. Oh, you won't believe some of the things that are happening. Another thing here is the Trump administration is warning U.S. businesses against contributing to China's abuses. In other words, what he's saying is, I'm warning you, because the next step is not warning, but an executive order. Stop buying crap from these Chinese communists that are being made with slave labor. He's warning them. You'll see. And they're going to ignore him. And then the next step, he'll pass an order or he'll get a bill passed or something like that. Now, because, see, Trump is putting a kink in the armor of all of these communists that are out there making money with other communists. So a bunch of these, you know, George Bush was a globalist. He wanted one world government. He didn't really give a damn who ran it. In fact, it looked like he was trying to push it for communist China. But a bunch of people who used to work with him, and they're proud how they claim that they're Republicans. And they're forming a new group now to back Biden. Yeah, they say that their mission is to restore the principles of unity, tolerance, and compassion to the United States. Yeah, you know, this is not the first or second or third or fourth time Biden's ran for president. In matter of fact, in 1988, he ran for president until the media did what they were supposed to do.
Democratic presidential candidate Joseph Biden today faces a controversy. 3 weeks ago at a debate at the Iowa State Fair, he used phrases identical to those delivered by British Labour Party leader Neil Kinnock.
Biden seemed to be claiming Kinnock's vision and life as his own.
Why is it that my wife is sitting out there in the audience, is the first in her family to ever go to college?
Why is Gladys the first woman in her family in a thousand generations to be able to get the university?
My ancestors who worked in the coal mines in northeast Pennsylvania don't come up after 12 hours and play football.
8 hours underground and then come up and play football.
It's because they didn't have a platform upon which to stand.
There was no platform upon which they could stand.
The notion that every thought or notion or idea you'd have to go back and find and attribute to someone, I think is quite frankly ludicrous.
The problem here is that Senator Biden told his audience he'd just been thinking about these things, and he failed to give any credit at all to his famous British speechwriter.
You know, I was thinking on the way over here. Now that's a little too much, because as you point out, what's behind the words? What's there? And a lot of people, the rap on Biden has always been that it's just a surface.
I should have said, to paraphrase Neil Kinnock, it's the only time I didn't, and all the times I've ever used it.
But CBS News found a tape of a second instance.
It reappeared in the New York Times with a new charge, that Biden had appropriated a famous litany from the late Robert Kennedy about what the gross national product cannot measure.
It cannot measure the health of our children.
The health of our children.
Quality of our education.
The quality of their education.
The joy of their play.
Or the joy of their play.
Biden gave Kennedy no credit. He has also quoted or paraphrased John Kennedy, Hubert Humphrey, and British Labour Party leader Neil Kinnock, all without credit.
Joseph Biden admitted today that he committed plagiarism when he was in law school. He said it was a mistake, but that it was unintentional.
He quoted 5 pages of someone else's work without proper citation.
I've done some dumb things. And I'll do dumb things again.
He was given an F.
So ladies and gentlemen, I've been dumb.
To the political community in Washington, it all seems of a piece. Plagiarism at law school, plagiarism on the stump.
The great communicator. Strike that. The great imitator.
You don't steal verbatim, or when you do, as he did 99% of the time, you give credit.
Biden's critics say he sells himself as a man whose words and visions can inspire a new generation in politics. But if the thoughts, phrases, and visions really belong to others, it's a form of false advertising.
Is it a wise idea, though, to take something that personal anyway from another politician and try and appropriate it to your own campaign?
I think it was a stupid thing to appropriate material that was really very personal, that was someone else's.
Most people didn't know who he was, you know, Joe Biden, and now they're going to say, oh yeah, he's the guy who plagiarized.
That's a lot of people.
First. Politically, that's devastating.
These clips are devastating. He looks like a Joe Biden wind-up doll with somebody else's words coming out. if they're going to do things that are stupid as well as immoral, then they're probably too dumb to have the job of president.
Voters are going to have to decide whether he was dishonest or dumb.
Senator Joseph Biden may have more explaining to do.
The new questions stem from taped remarks of Biden during an April campaign appearance in New Hampshire.
I went to law school on a full academic scholarship, the only one in my class to have a full academic scholarship. Went back to law school and, in fact, ended up in the top half of my class. I was the outstanding student in the political science department at the end of my year. I graduated with 3 degrees from undergraduate school and 165 credits, only needed 123 credits.
Biden now concedes he did not graduate in the top half of his law school class, that he does not have 3 degrees from college, and that he was not named outstanding political science student in college.
Newsweek says Biden actually went to school on a half scholarship, ended up near the bottom of his class, and won only 1 degree, not 3.
Joe Biden ranked 76th in a class of 85 at the University of Syracuse Law School. I mean, this guy comes off this whole thing as a flyweight.
Now Biden says Newsweek is right. His memory had failed him.
And I'd be delighted to sit down and compare my IQ to yours if you'd like, Frank.
Joe Biden was victimized by the truth.
Bye-bye Biden. He may not know it yet, but I think this is going to be very difficult for him to recover.
I don't know, but I don't think all the gaffes that Biden makes and all the weird lies that he makes up are something new. I think he's been doing this since he first got into politics. In fact, he's a known criminal. Him and his son have ripped off billions of dollars from all kinds of countries all over the world. In fact, Biden has a cancer group. This is a nonprofit organization that he has, and they have discovered that this nonprofit spends 65% of the money they get on staff. On staff. Now, you've heard Trump say, we can't do this mail-in balloting because it's going to be open fraud. It's the Democrats will just completely destroy the reality and the honor of voting. Well, I have only one example of that. Mail-in ballots, they're changing them, they're hiding them, they're destroying them. And I've, in the past month, I've seen dozens of different examples of Democrats committing fraud with these mail-in ballots. But you know something? This is not anything new. Democrats have been doing this kind of stuff since day one.
Something that characterizes third world nations is corruption in elections. Now, in America, corruption tries to get in, and we have prosecutions going right now of voter fraud. That's not something you want in a free nation, but it's not something new to America. I have some old newspapers here. This one actually happens to be from 1864. This is Harper's Weekly. We're in the middle of the Civil War, and they're talking about voter fraud in here. And you open this up, and you see here a picture of some guys gathered around a gravestone. And below it, it says how the Copperheads obtained their votes. Now, the Copperheads, that's a group of Northern Democrats. And so they're going around to gravestones, taking the names off so the dead do vote. But this was an issue back in 1864. Here's another one that deals with voter fraud. This one is from 1872. And you open it up on the inside, you have a black man lying dead. It says, Negro killed. It says, one vote less. That's part of how they were able to have voter fraud in the South, because at that point in time, every black was Republican. And so that's how Democrats would keep control. Here's one from 1876. 1876 on the inside, the picture here, a black man standing between two white guys with a gun. And the caption said, of course he wants to vote the Democrat ticket. So this is voter fraud. Now, it was a lot of compulsion back then, but voter fraud is something that threatens the integrity of good government, something we never want, but it's not a new problem in America.
All right, now we're going to get into the disgusting category called the liberal psychosis. To get his little 2 cents worth of catering to the black communists, the Archbishop of Canterbury says that Jesus should not be portrayed as white. He wasn't white. Let's see. Instagram says Christian worship is harmful. All of the Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, and all of the other 147 different social media garbage things that these pinhead millennials spend their life on, this is the final push. They're doing everything they can to shut down conservative American voices. They're banning them right and left. You would not believe what's being banned. I mean, this is astounding. I'm astounded that I'm still on some of the places I'm on. So Instagram has decided that Christian worship is harmful, so they're banning it from Instagram. Let's see. LA City Council has decided to replace the LAPD, most of them, not all of them, most of them, with what's called community responders. Now, in one sense, that's better than certain things. How do I put it? When I was on a reservation as a kid, they had what you would call peacekeepers. Yeah, they had police. They had guns. You know, these are some really hard-ass guys. But they had peacekeepers. And these guys would go, like, if there's a disturbance, if it's too loud, they'd send two or three of these guys over there saying, look, guys, you got to keep the sound down. Or if there was a domestic problem, they would send a couple counselors over there to talk to the guy and the woman and get it settled down and quieted down. Well, the LA City Council has decided that this is what they're going to do. They're going to have community responders. But they'd better have real good insurance, because in the areas that these people are going to be going, they're probably going to get shot. Virginia has a new gun law. Virginia has a new gun law almost every month, or some other new psychotic, disgusting, anti-American thing. Well, this is, you're going to hear this, and then I'm going to, okay, so this thing says, it's that background checks on all gun sales in the state. No civilian sales of firearms without going through a background check. Guy next door to you can't sell you a shotgun unless you both go down to the police department and go through a background check. You can be arrested and fined if you fail to report a lost or stolen gun within 48 hours. You can only buy one handgun a month. Now, all of this crap, these things that you, this is not individual, this is not like, oh, this Virginia just come up with this idea. No, this is the crap that California passed 20 years ago. And believe it or not, Nevada passed it. That just shocked my brother all to hell, because he's an NRA rep for Nevada. And people in Nevada, you know, they don't have a lot of people there. They have criminal aliens. And they make their money by working at the casinos. So they pass these bills and people don't even pay attention. The next thing you know, that's it. It's illegal to sell a firearm as a civilian in the state of Nevada and in the state of Virginia. Let's see. The Navy is banning troops from indoor religious services. The Navy. I had a talk with a friend of mine, and he was a Marine, and we're in agreement that all branches of the military have been taken over. It is tolerance. That's what it is. And it's now the military is a social justice experiment. The Navy is banning worship in churches, but they'll allow protests. You know, you want to go to a protest with 500 other people, that's fine. That's all right. That's no problem. Facebook is slapping warnings on Republican National Committee videos when they come out and say, see these 12 guys here, they all committed murder, and these are all illegal aliens. Well, that's racist. So Facebook is slapping warning on that kind of videos. But they allow other users to demonize white people, men, cops, Christians. They allow that. Like, if you go on Facebook and say, you know, I'm getting tired of all these blacks causing problems, wow, you're going to get either kicked off or they're going to send you a warning for your hate speech. But not these people, not the communists, not the Democrats, not the socialists, no, not a bit. YouTube is banning people like crazy. Anybody who they have determined exhibits hate speech, they're banning them. David Duke, Richard Spencer, bunch of other ones. YouTube is shutting down conservative websites, and they're claiming it's hate speech. What is happening now is stating facts as becoming hate speech. I went into Costco last year, and I was talking, I was in line waiting, and as I was coming up to line, I'm putting my food on the track there, and it's coming forward, and this lady's picking up, the cashier picks up my chips I bought and slams them down. I said, ma'am, please be careful. You're damaging my chips. She goes, I don't like the way you're talking to me. You're antagonizing. You're angry. You're threatening. You're threatening me. I'm like, what? So this is what they do. Well, let's see what else. Twitch. Twitch banned Trump for hateful conduct. Now, I mentioned this before, Reddit. Reddit is a website that has all kinds of what they call subreddits on it, which is a platform where people can go and talk. You know, you want to talk about frying pans, there's a whole subreddit for that. And there was one on there, subreddit, the largest, had the most motion on it, was called The Donald. But it was all about Trump. Reddit banned it. And Reddit is banning over 2,000 different threads and subreddits that had to do with Trump or conservatives or anything. And just to let you guys know, I don't know how many of you out there were on the Donald on Reddit. There's a new website that is totally, it's exactly like Reddit was, except it's secure, and it's for conservatives, and it's called thedonald.win. Thedonald.win. And it's where people go and post things that have to do with conservatism and with our president. Now, there was a website that popped up that was claiming, yes, we don't, we're not going to cancel anything. We're not going to determine what's right, what's wrong. We're going to let people say whatever they want. And it was called Parler, P-A-R-L-E-R. And everybody was warning, nope, this guy that founded this is nothing more than another one of these commies from the Bay Area. And it turned out that was right. So he's now banning people that he doesn't like. Let's see, the founder of Black Entertainment Television, a racist named Robert Johnson, has decided that now is the time, and there's a lot of other black racists out there that are agreeing with him, that us white people should be forced to pay $14 trillion in reparations to long-dead slaves. I got no idea. Speaking of insane, Washington Post. Trump came out and said the 20 most dangerous cities in the United States are run by Democrats. And Washington Post came out and corrected him, of course. And so did all the other monitor websites corrected Trump. Well, here's the thing. He is right, and then he's not right. Because one of those 20 is not a Democrat, it's an independent. But the 20 most dangerous cities in the United States, all of them, are controlled by Democrats. New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Houston, Philadelphia, Memphis, Detroit, Dallas, Phoenix, Baltimore, San Antonio, Las Vegas, Milwaukee, Nashville, Charlotte, Albuquerque, Jacksonville, Florida, St. Louis, San Francisco, and Cleveland. In that order. New York being the most dangerous. And yeah, all controlled by Democrats. Oh, the Minneapolis City Council, you know, the poster boys for stupid are calling to defund the police. And during the same meeting, they said, but we need $63,000 a year for our own private security because we're afraid for our lives. New York Police Department, 49% spike in officers filing for retirement. I wonder why. Now we're getting into the enforcement arm of the communists in the United States, and that would be Antifa. Most of you guys don't know the history of Antifa. Antifa is not anything new. Antifa was founded in 1932 in the Weimar Republic, in this Germany, and it was founded by the Stalinist Communist Party of Germany. Antifa is a communist organization. And what they do is, they claim they're anti-fascist, but they are fascists. You see, this is how communists do it. They'll, it's like little kids, you're a commie. No, you're a commie. Now, well, this is what they do. They are fascists. and they are communistic. Antifa has been around since the since 1932. They are literally insane. They fight everyone. Everyone. They kill. They will be killing. They're already using weapons now. When I say weapons, I'm talking projectile pistols, paintball guns. In fact, there was, and they don't all wear black. Now they, a lot of them do. You'll see them wearing black, and then they'll have a black cap on. They'll have a black mask on. They'll have a backpack. That's their motif. If you see someone dressed like that, they're the enemy. They're actually a domestic terrorism. And if I see someone dressed like that, I'm going to take them down and perform a citizen's arrest. It's that simple. There's no ifs, ands, or buts, because these guys have been deemed terrorists. They are terrorists, and the only people who agree with them or appreciate them are other communists. So just listen to what I said there. There was a guy shot already going through a crowd. Here's this thing that people do. Like, let's say you take a wrong turn, and all of a sudden you got like 50 people in front of you blocking the whole street. Well, what do? You sit there and go, what the hell do I do? And then all of a sudden these people are pounding on your car. Well, I hate to tell you this. You put your foot down on the gas pedal. You run over them. You knock them down. You get the hell out of the way. And you take your chances later. Do not think they're not going to hurt you. Utah, they had a Black Lives Matter riot there. And a guy got trapped amongst these rioters. And as he took off, they fired into his car. They're using firearms now. Why do they do this crap? Because they get away with it. They do this crap because they get away with it. A police officer was driving through the protesters, and they jumped on his car, and he took off, and they tried to sue him for assault and all of this crap. And it's like, no, sorry. He was afraid for his life. Now, you've seen pictures of what we did up here in Coeur d'Alene when Antifa said they were coming here. Over 1,600 of us armed were downtown. So that's given rise to these rioters pretending they're Americans too, and they're having guns. So I have it's a series of pictures here. I have the website. It's the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, where one of these dumb bastards shot himself in a foot. He's carrying an AR-15, he's carrying it hot with a round in the chamber, the safety off, and his finger on the trigger, and he kind of shoots himself in the foot. Okay, sorry. Which brings me to another point. Every month since January has been a record-setting month for firearm sales. I got a phone call from a friend of mine in Texas. He goes, "You're not going to believe it. I never thought I'd see it. Texans, we're out of guns. All the gun stores, out of guns. People are buying guns as quick as they come in. They're buying them all over the United States. And there's a reason behind that. And you know it as well as I do. This Black Lives Matter, these people that founded Black Lives Matter, they are sexual psychotics. No ands or buts. They're lesbians. They're they hate men. They hate whites. In fact, one of them even calls white people defects. We're defects. And there's Nation of Islam even teaches that. The whites are defects and we're accidents and we need to be eradicated. And in fact, the Black Lives Matter hand out flyers that says we're at war. White people are the enemy. New York Police Department retreats from City Hall because the protesters were threatening to hurt them. Portland protesters tore down a racist statue of Thomas Jefferson. This is like insane. Maybe not. Maybe not insane. Maybe it's exactly what needs to get done to get the rest of us off our butts so we start handling people. Oklahoma's county DA is charging rioters with terrorism now. And as a matter of fact, and I don't know exactly where this place is, but you got blacks are they create their own history. They create their own future. When they're criminals, they're going to be treated like criminals. And unfortunately, right now, the communists in the United States are using black criminals as martyrs. But I can tell you what, there's a certain place in the United States where they know how to handle these criminals.
The Gremlin Street Gang is responsible for hundreds of violent crimes, murders, armed robberies, witness intimidation, burglaries, drug trafficking, extortion, and brutal beatings. We've arrested 10 of these thugs and have warrants on 7 more. Every one of these animals is most definitely armed and dangerous. We have felony warrants for your arrest. You will be hunted. You will be tracked. And if you raise your weapon to a man like me, we'll return fire with superior fire. You think men like these are afraid of an uneducated, 125-pound punk like you that's never won a fair fight in your life and holds your gun sideways? I'll meet you on solid ground anytime, anywhere, light or heavy. Makes no difference to me. You won't walk away. Look at you. Men like us, son, we do dumbbell presses with weights bigger than you. And the convicts in jail, most of those men are good people who just found themselves crossed with the law. They're not evil, and they don't respect you or any punk like you. They'll toss you around like a rag doll. I encourage every citizen watching this to look into your own heart and find the American courage that conquers all evil. I implore you to listen to this message and stand up. Take back your streets. Take back your country. Come forward with information about these heathens that have terrorized your community. And for those who would use this message as a way to create false racial division in our country, take a close look behind me. Standing next to every cop is a leader of our black community. This is not about race. It's about right versus wrong. One last message to the gremlins. You don't like the things I've told you tonight? I got one thing to say. I'm easy to find. On behalf of the St. Landry Parish Sheriff's Office, the Louisiana State Police, the U.S. Marshals, and every cop and law-abiding citizen from sea to shining sea, I'm Captain Clay Higgins, asking every patriot to stand up, share this video, and send a clear message to the world. We're Americans. We'd rather die on our feet than live on our knees.
My sentiments exactly. Virginia is allowing police to be assaulted. You know, it used to be a felony all through the United States if you assault a police officer. No, now it's just a misdemeanor. You know, you get a $100 ticket if you put a bullet in a cop's back or something like that. And we have the racist blacks in Congress are screaming about reparations now. You know, they want to make steam while everything's happening. And this is it. You know, you get motion going. You don't want to waste this motion. So you're going to find these racists, and they're yelling for reparations. And I'll tell them, you know what? You find me a slave, and I'll fund that slave. Okay? I'll get that slave out of the gutter and get that slave up and get that slave into school. But until you point out a slave that I can help, don't waste my time with this crap. Mississippi. You can tell where the Democrats are there. Mississippi is fully controlled by Democrats now. You know what's funny? Democrats created racism in the United States. Democrats were the only ones ever to own slaves. All blacks were Republican after they were freed because Republicans were the only ones that gave a damn about them. But for some strange reason, the Democrats are now in charge of the majority of blacks in the United States. Mississippi, well, they're changing the flag. I don't know what they're going to do, make it all white for surrender, I guess. Oh, I've been informed that celebrating the 4th of July is a white supremacist celebration, so blacks and Democrats aren't going to celebrate the 4th of July. I'm going to have to read this one to you. So a professional athlete's quit over team's pro-Trump, pro-anthem tweet and call it backhanded racism. Really? So the coach posted this tweet. Hey, real Donald Trump, pro fast pitch being played live, blah, 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 everyone respecting the flag. That's it. What is that? What is that? Well, a bunch of these people, black, said, well, this is a backhanded assault on us. It's racism. This is racism. So they quit. Good golly. This is getting more and more stupid. But fully expected. Look what we got. These people go to school. They go to public school. Then they go to a communist indoctrination center called college. Those of you who like to watch sports, Black Lives Matter, this communist organization, that is pushing for the overthrow of the United States government and the death of all whites in the United States, has gained so much credibility that the National Basketball Association, the NBA, is going to paint BLM on all of their courts. Well, I don't... Sure, you look at that. The 90% racist blacks. The NBA is 90% of blacks. Only 10% whites play basketball in the NBA. And the NFL. The NFL is going to play something somebody created called the Black National Anthem, or the Black Anthem. And they're going to play that before every game, before the United States National Anthem. Now, the NFL is 70% black. And, this is the cancel culture, right? They want to cancel everything out that has to do with white. So they've decided that the John Wayne Airport needs to be changed. Name needs to be changed because John Wayne, they claim, was a racist. I knew John Wayne. Didn't know him good enough to know if he was a racist or not. But I've heard some interviews with him where he was saying the black people at this stage, and of course we're talking in the 40s, the black people in this stage can't rule themselves. They can't run their own businesses. So as soon as they can, cut them loose, let them do what they want to do. But because of that, they want to change the name. And then you're going to love this one. And I have links to all of this stuff, right? You guys, you can see all the links of everything that I'm talking about. And you'll understand this. This woman, she is a black racist, hates whites, hates everyone who isn't her. And she's videoing herself threatening to stab people if anybody dares use this statement, all lives matter. Because in these communist racist viewpoint, only black lives matter. Nobody else matters. So she's out there proudly doing what the rest of the millennials do, stupidly and over again, which is tell Facebook or Twitter or TikTok or some other social media, social meaning other people involved. They say these stupid things on the air, and then they wonder what happens and why things happen. Well, she's all upset now because she got fired. She got fired from an accounting firm who just didn't want the notoriety of having a racist communist threatening death on people. And then we have the more of these racist Democrats, these communists in Congress and Senate. They're pushing Mark Zuckerberg to act, quote unquote, on white supremacy. Unless you grovel and drop to your knees and kiss the foot of some black guy, you're a white supremacist. Unless you do exactly as you're told, you're a white supremacist. This is what I mean when I say that blacks are creating their own future. It's not good, boys and girls. This future they're creating is not something that any sane human is ever going to want to live in. Because that future is going to be called civil war. People are getting fed up, and it's going to get to the point where they're going to start shooting. And when I say the, I mean white people. They're going to start shooting. And just because you got a gun does not mean, and I'm talking to the black people out there, just because you got a gun doesn't mean you know how to use it or are willing to use it. And that's the problem that we have right now, is that people have firearms. They're proud of that. They know how to shoot. Well, they can shoot a gnat on a wall 50 feet away with a BB gun, or a deer, or an elk 500 yards away with a 300 Winchester Magnum. But are they willing to fire on another human? And that's the problem. They're not. They'll hold it, they'll brandish their weapon and threaten them, the thugs. I had a situation years ago where I had a 45 and I went up to a dozen gang members. And they were threatening to destroy the neighborhood I was in, and I said, no, you're not. And I pulled my gun out and they just laughed at me. I would have had to shoot one of them if they kept coming. But instead, I put the gun away and pulled out a stun gun. Now, the stun gun I carried, it's not a taser. Stun gun is an electrical discharge device that causes pain. You hear the sound. And the one I had is a commercial unit that sounds like a .22 automatic going off. So I pulled that up and I pushed the trigger a couple times. That scared the hell out of them. The pistol didn't. Why? Because they know normal citizens don't want to kill someone. They don't want to pull the trigger. I didn't want to pull the trigger. I don't want to pull any trigger. I don't want people pulling triggers. I don't want any of this crap going on. But the future is being created right now by all of these communists, all of these Black Lives Matter. And unfortunately, again, I told you before, less than 15% of all of these rioters are Black. The rest of them are white. Those white people are going to suffer the same. This is going to be a very, very, very short war. And it's unfortunately going to pull a whole bunch of different organizations and even possibly countries into it. We don't know. But we don't really want it. But they're creating it. Let's see. Remember I mentioned all the communists, including all the Democrats are communists, and in fact some Republicans are communists. Well, some Republicans, they want to replace Columbus Day with Juneteenth. None of this really matters in the long run, because all it is proof that we have succumbed to the communist demands. And what's happening on Facebook right now, Zuckerberg's being told, you got to handle all this white supremacy, this hate speech. And they're looking at all of this stuff. Whoa, this isn't hate speech. Yes, it is. In fact, if you don't ban all the conservatives from Facebook, we're going to stop advertising there. So there's a whole bunch of corporations, and you know them, that are blackmailing Facebook into taking down everybody who isn't Black Lives Matter or some psychotic communist. We're talking Adidas, Reebok, Ford, Hewlett-Packard, Microsoft, Hershey's Chocolate, REI, The North Face, Patagonia, Eddie Bauer, Verizon, Coca-Cola, Denny's, Ben & Jerry's, Levi's, Honda. All of these places advertise on Facebook. And now they're threatening Facebook and saying, if you don't do what we said, we're going to cancel our advertising. Now, you know, you got a bunch of communists threatening a communist. And I don't know where this is going to go. This is really, really strange. What's strange, and I have a website, I have a page for it. You guys can go look at this. A Black conservative man and his wife were walking along somewhere, and they see this Black Lives Matter, this protest. So he walks over there, and there's a couple dozen people over there, and he's looking at all these people, and he walks up to them and says, this is a Black Lives Matter protest? And yes, it is. And he says, there's no Black people here. Why, there's no Black people at your Black Lives Matter protest? So, of course, they called him racist, of course, yeah. Now, there was a new bill filed in Idaho here, and you're going to love this. Now, see, you have all these communist these states, and they want to defund the police. So his new bill, if you defund the police, which means get rid of the police department, then you also, at the same time, you cancel all gun restrictions and all control of firearms, so that citizens can then carry firearms and defend themselves. And oh, by the way, because of the innate and systematic racism that the Democrat Party has been doing since the late 1700s, there is now a resolution for the Democratic Party to change their name. I don't think so. I don't think they will. So we got a few minutes left, so we're going to get into government threat. Now, it's not necessarily our government. You know, the British gave Hong Kong back to China in 1997, and China promised that for 50 years that they would allow Hong Kong to be a capitalist country and not be a communist nation. And, you know, all of this garbage. Hong Kong is supposed to be an independent country until for 50 years. Okay. Well, for the past 6 months or about a year, you notice there's been a lot of problems happening in Hong Kong. China has been trying to place puppet rulers in there, and the people are not having any part of it. And unfortunately, what's happening now is that China just simply said, the hell with the agreement. And China has stepped in and taken full control of Hong Kong and started arresting people. It is, they passed a security, a big, sweeping Hong Kong security law. And so far, they've arrested almost 1,000 people. You know how communist nations are. When they come in and take over, they immediately start arresting people who kind of disappear and are never seen again. And that's what's happening in Hong Kong right now. In fact, in China, you know the social scores that everybody has now? See, in China, everybody's mandated to have a cell phone. And if to give you an idea, let's say you want to go have sushi and you go to this restaurant. Well, you can't just open the door and go in. Your phone, you hold your phone up to the door, and the internet connects to your phone and lets you know whether or not you qualify to go in. This is what's happening, okay? This is major, and we talked about this. This is artificial intelligence controlling everything. Well, now in China, Christians are ordered either give up your faith or your food. You'll no longer be able to purchase food. You'll no longer be able to go from one place to another. You'll no longer be able to transport your harvest to the market to sell. See, it's real simple. Real simple. And speaking of communist countries, we go back to Virginia now. Virginia. New state law requires police to ask drivers their race. This used to be illegal. But now, each time a law enforcement officer or state police stops a driver, they're ordered to collect the following data based on the officer's observation or information provided to the officer by the driver. The race, ethnicity, age, and gender. And gender, you have to ask the gender of the person stopped. What the hell is going on? Well, I guess I can understand that now. Nowadays, nobody knows. You know, you can decide that you're one race or one ethnicity. You can decide that you're a tree or a violin or male or female or what have you. But now they're having them ask these questions. You know, like the census. They send the census out, and the census says how many people live in a house, how many males, how many females, what's the race, what's this, what's that, and they really. I mean, there's like 27 pages of this crap, which mysteriously disappears from my house every time it shows up. But it's against the law. If you come into my store and you want to fill out an application for a job, I can't ask these questions. It's against the law. Yet the government can do it. And just so you guys know about this census information, the census that you fill out is not private. That census goes to thousands of different organizations. They buy the right to get the data. And they get your name, and they get your address, and they get your phone number, and they get your ethnicity and your gender and all this crap. They get everything. They know what house you have. They know how many bedrooms in the house. They know how many bathrooms in the house. So they'll contact you selling you all kinds of stuff, carpets, towels. You're going to start getting all kinds of information next year once the census has been turned in and everything's been handled. That's just how it, this, I don't know, this is utterly ridiculous. But be that as it may, ladies and gentlemen, the psychosis of liberalism has been spread and has infected your children because you've allowed it. And if you've allowed it, you've probably been infected yourself. We've lost, I figured out five different generations in a row that we've lost to communism, or you want to call it progressive or liberalism or even Democrat, whatever you want to call it. America, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine today, and he tells me, you know, Thomas Jefferson showed up here. He'd look around and go, how the hell did you guys last this long? I mean, it's astounding that we've gone this long and not had a major civil war and wiped out the whole concept of the United States. I don't think a civil war is going to change anything except a whole bunch of dead bodies. But the only thing that I'm looking for is a cataclysm. You know, like an asteroid hits the Earth or Nestle stopped making chocolate drink or you know, something that's astounding that affects everyone. All right, now we're going to get into cookware. See, what's my job? My job is to instruct you in different things that could make your life a little easier. Now, what we're going to be talking about today is cast iron cookware and Revereware, very famous stainless steel copper-coated bottom cookware. The cast iron is one of the oldest metals used in cooking. The Chinese in Asia, China, India, Korea, Japan, there's a long history that goes back thousands of years of using cast iron to cook with. Now, Anglos were a little slow in using cast iron. It didn't pop up until around, 680 or 90 AD. But cast iron cookware has been handed down from generation to generation to generation. I have pots, cast iron pots, that are easily 50 years old. I have a couple of them that are probably 100 years old. So cast iron has been used all over the place because not only can it handle extremely high heat, you can fry on cast iron frying pan on top of your stove and then take it and put it right directly in the oven at 450 degrees, and it's not going to hurt it a bit. And on top of that, if the seasoning is done well, because cast iron is a type of porous metal, and you have to season it, and then I'll be talking about that and explain that to you. But if you do it right, then it's almost nonstick, literally. Now, it's not magical where you can crack an egg in it and then blow on the side and it'll roll itself up. But cast iron, when used, will cook anything. I don't care what it is. We have a cast iron pot that I used since I was a little kid called a Dutch oven. And it had four legs, and the lid that went on top of it had a rim around it. And the idea, well, it also had a handle, or called a bale, so that it could hang over a fire or it could sit in the coals. The idea was you would put whatever you're cooking in it, set it in the coals or on the heat or on fire or near fire, what have you, and take some of the coals and stack them on the lid. That's what the lip was for. And what we would do is we'd generally go fishing, and we'd have a whole mess of trout, and we'd take the trout and we'd clean them, and then we'd coat them down with butter, and we'd take a lemon wedge and stick it inside of the gut cavity, and then we'd roll it in aluminum foil, and we'd pile them in this Dutch oven. And then we sit them at the edge of the fire and turn it every 5 minutes. And with about a half hour, all the fish were cooked so perfectly that they just fall apart. And we'd also take, you know, those Pillsbury biscuits, you know, the tubes, you smack them, they pop open. We'd take those. We'd first wipe the inside of the Dutch oven with butter. And then we'd take these and we'd set them inside the Dutch oven. And then we'd put the lid on it, and we set it near the fire, and we'd slowly turn it. And after about the whole 15 minutes to 20 minutes to half hour, it just all depends on if we had a beer in our hand or not. And we'd have biscuits. So we'd have biscuits and fish. But that's what a Dutch oven does, and it's an astounding way to cook. And I'll have links to everything I'm going to talk about, plus more, on how to cook with a Dutch oven. There's going to be all kinds of recipes. You would not believe the amount of recipes that you can do. Anything you can do, period. I don't care. Anything you can cook in either a Dutch oven or cast iron frying pans. And I mean, we have. Now, here's the thing. You've got to be careful. You do not want to use cast iron on any of these ceramic stovetops. You will crack them or scratch the hell out of the ceramic. Do not use it. Cast iron is for gas. Heating, or using it in a fireplace, or cook stove, or an open fire, and in the oven, on electric burners, but they will not work on those newfangled induction cooktops or the ceramics. I'm really, really got to make this really important to you guys. Do not use cast iron on a ceramic cooktop. I had a very good friend who spent $1,800 on this brand new cook stove. I mean, it was beautiful. It was gorgeous. And he wanted to use his cast iron, and I warned him not to. I said, do not use cast iron on here. And he goes, well, I'm going to, but I'm not going to move it. I'll set it down and leave it there. Yeah, he did that. Yeah, he set it down and left it there. And then one day, after a couple weeks, as he was moving the frying pan into the oven, he slipped out of his hand, hit the stove surface ceramic, and fractured it. And there was no warranty on that. Most of these places don't warranty, stupid. And that's exactly what happened to him. Now, Lodge is the oldest known cast iron manufacturer in the world. In fact, it's the most well-known. They have a plant in the United States. Now, I have heard that it's now cast iron, Lodge cast iron is now being made in China, but I haven't seen any sub-quality because you know it's not going to be the same quality as Lodge is. I haven't seen any. But anyway, I want to play for you a little history on Lodge cast iron.
When coal was king and iron was the South's gold, South Pittsburgh, Tennessee was in its heyday. Young men flocked to the Pittsburgh of the South to seek their fortune. One of those men was Joseph Lodge.
According to the legend, Joe Lodge walked from Chattanooga to South Pittsburgh, found work in this area with Tennessee Coal and Iron Company at a blast furnace. After working there for a while, he started his own foundry, originally Blacklock Foundry, to make cast iron cookware. In 1910, the foundry burned down, and when he rebuilt the foundry on the south end of town, he renamed it Lodge Manufacturing.
And today, over 115 years later, the company has survived as the only manufacturer of cast iron cookware in America. As fads come and go and products are developed, from Teflon to ionized surfaces, cast iron and the name Lodge have endured for more than four generations of cooks.
There have been some hard times, as most businesses encounter, but I think that the basic nature of cast iron and the multi-uses, you can cook almost anything any way you want to cook it in cast iron. And so it's such a versatile kitchen piece that we have managed to really thrive in a lot of cases where other cookwares have struggled a little bit.
Through the years, an endless stockpile of products have been developed and produced at a foundry that remains relatively unchanged, except for a few technological advances. It all begins here, in this pile of co-mingled metals, pig iron, steel, and Lodge's own recycled castings. It takes 10 pounds of poured metal to make one 5-pound skillet. 200 workers man two 10-hour shifts, 4 days a week.
From the minute the metal's poured till packing is 90 minutes. On an average, we make 400 pieces of cast iron cookware an hour. That's with two lines. And sometimes, if all the cast iron gods align, we can make up to 1,600 pieces an hour.
The metal is melted at 2,800 degrees. Impurities, known as slag, float to the top. The slag is then skimmed off, and the molten metal is tested every 30 minutes for 19 different things, specifically to ensure that heavy metals are not present. From the melting deck, the liquid metal is transported to this huge machine known as the Dezimatic. At a constant 2,500 degrees, smoldering iron shoots into sandcast molds.
What we've been able to do is automate a century-old process. To give you an example, back in the day when we hand-poured cast iron, a good person could make 200 molds in a 10-hour shift. Today, we can make 400 molds an hour.
A constant temperature of 2,500 degrees ensures a consistency to the cookware, eliminating white swirls and gray creases that produce imbalanced heat retention for the consumer. As the ironware breaks out of the molds, all of the debris crumbles onto conveyor belts. A shaking machine removes sand, which will be recycled. Quality control looks at the skillet, A few have rough edges and a grinder's used to make them smooth. Stainless steel pebbles add more smoothness to the surface, and a thorough washing gets the pans ready for a process that has brought cast iron cookware into the 21st century.
Well, we realized as the years went by that the two big drawbacks of cast iron were, one, that it's heavy, which is also an advantage from a cooking perspective, but also that seasoning was an issue, having to season that raw iron. So back in 2000, we started realizing that we needed to develop a process to be able to season the skillets.
A soy-based vegetable oil coats the cast iron with an electrostatic system that ensures the oil will adhere to the cookware. After the spraying, it's baked at a very high temperature, turning the gray metal into a black patina. As newer generations buy cast iron, they're discovering its versatility.
Careful you don't burn your mouth on this one, because you're going to want to eat this right out of the pan.
And the demand is being fueled by television.
There's been a renaissance, in a sense, with a younger group of people driven by the 24-hour food network shows. Cooking shows are popular. Cooking is popular. That's what's really caused the resurgence of cast iron and the realization by the public that it's such a versatile and wonderful piece to have in the kitchen.
And what would Joseph Lodge say to his great-grandson if he could see what has happened to his company he started in 1896?
I think he'd just say, wow. I don't see how it could not have exceeded all his expectations for longevity, for product quality, the range of products that we offer. I think he'd be amazed.
So that'd give you a little background on cast iron. Anyway, now China does make cast iron frying pans and Dutch ovens and all of that stuff, but the walls are much thinner. They're very, very thin. If you want cast iron cookware of any kind, get either Lodge or do some research, and you can come to the website at armchairsurvivalist.com and you look at the show notes for July 5th, and I'll have some other names. There's Wagner, there's Griswold. These are older companies, but they were not as prevalent in manufacturing cast iron all over the world. Now, there's tricks to this, right? There's tricks to buying this stuff. There's tricks to seasoning it. There's tricks to cleaning it. Now, we're all talking about cast iron here now. We go to yard sales, my son and I find cast iron ware there, and most people have no clue what the hell it is. They've heard somebody one time say, hey, this stuff is great, you got to get some, and then they get it, and then they have no clue what to do with it. And they end up destroying it, or washing it in hot soapy water after every time they use it, which will tear out the seasoning that you've done. So usually you'll find cast iron that's coated and caked with crap. And they think now it's worth nothing. So sure, I'll give them a buck for it. And then I'll take it home and I'll clean it up. Now, if you have cast iron, if you buy some cast iron, say you buy it new, Costco does sell some cast iron, Lodge cast iron there, and it claims it's pre-seasoned. And it is. It's probably pre-seasoned, but I don't know about you, but I don't trust anything that comes out that comes out of any store. I want to wash it first. So you're going to have to clean it. Even if it is pre-season, you're going to have to clean it, and that means hot soap and water. And then you're going to have to re-season it yourself. Seasoning basically is when metal absorbs some liquid of some kind to create a finish on it. In gunsmithing, we would season certain ferrous metals so that they would be black. In cookware, you season cast iron with a type of soy oil, if you know soybean oil. You can use anything, but you want oil that has a high smoke range. This is the temperature that it's supposed to be at. So some oils start smoking real fast, and some will take higher temperatures before they start smoking. It's called the smoke point. And I have a list here of different type of oils and what temperature they'll smoke at. Like almond oil, it'll start smoking about 420 degrees. Avocado oil, 520 degrees. Butter, 350 degrees. Let's see, canola oil, 400 degrees, coconut oil, 350 degrees, corn oil, 450 degrees. You see, it's each one has its own smoke point. And you want to use, when you're seasoning, you want to use an oil that goes to the top, that can take high temperatures. I usually use soybean or sunflower and try and get non-GMO soybean if you can. You're just seasoning with this thing, right? And it's very simple what you do. Now, let's say you buy some new cast iron and you want to season it, even if it says pre-seasoned. All right, so you're going to wash it in hot soapy water and you're going to pat it dry as quickly as possible. I would advise not using a good towel for anything. Anytime you deal with cast iron, don't use a good towel. You know, paper towels, even if you have to. And then you immediately take that frying pan. Now, you use hot water when you're doing this because it does two things. It cuts off any oil. It helps ripping off any oil that's on the cast iron. And it heats up the cast iron, so the cast iron will start to dry naturally. Now, you have to do this fast. As soon as it has been patted dry, you set it on a burner and you get it warm, just past the stage where you could touch it with your hand. Okay, so it's not really hot, but most people will, oh no, that's too hot. And then you have a rag that is soaked in the oil that you're going to use. And you wipe the frying pan down. Now, my first seasoning, I wipe it down on the inside, and then I wipe it down on the outside as well. It's going to stop any possibility of rusting. So you wipe everything down. Have some newspaper sitting on the counter or towels or something, all right? Wipe it all down real good and set it down and let it sit. That's seasoning. And then every time you use cast iron, you never use soap again. And you never use really abrasive scrubbing utensils on it. Sometimes you might have to use a steel spatula to scrape off some residue, but you want to treat it really, really carefully. So after you've used it, then you would running hot water, and I use a brush. You can go to the dollar store and get one of these stiff bristle brushes, and that's how I wash it out. If there's anything stuck inside, I'll pick it off with my thumbnail or something like that. And then I instantly, as soon as it's patted dry, while it's still hot from the hot water, I set it on the burner, turn the burner on for a second, just enough to start the cast iron heating, and then I wipe down the inside with whatever oil that I'm seasoning with. You're almost re-seasoning each time you clean it. Be careful. Don't use high temperatures on the stovetop. Some people will, and it's hard for me to understand how they can do this, but some people will crud up the bottom of a cast iron pan, especially if they have gas heat. They get oil over the side and then they burn it into the bottom of the pan. I never had that done. My family's used cast iron for hundreds of years. I've never seen that problem. Now, so that's what you do to it if you buy it new. Now, I bought a lot of this stuff used, mainly because people don't know what the hell they got and how to take care of it. So at that point, now, when I was a kid, this is what Grandma would do. This is the day she's making soap. So she figured, I got a high fire outside, I might as well season all the pans at the same time. And she made soap every year in the spring. So she'd have this fire. And she'd bring out the frying pans. And she would turn them upside down and sit them in the coals. I mean, I've sat there and watched these things get almost red hot. Now, what that does, that burns everything off, literally. Then she would let them cool overnight. And obviously, you know, you're not going to be an idiot and grab those out of a burning fire. And she'd let it cool overnight. And the next day she'd come out and she'd scrub them down with a special brush she had. And then she would coat them in lard. I mean, coat them. She'd coat the inside, then put about an inch of lard in the inside. And then she'd put it on a cook stove that they had out back that they used to use when they're smoking salmon or bear. And let them get real hot. And then she'd grab a rag and she'd swirl it around inside. And it's an all-day thing. You go out there every once in a while and swirl the lard around, and eventually all of that stuff, it just sort of evaporated. And then she'd let them cool and wipe them down and bring them back in the house, and they're perfect for another year. I mean, I watched her cook a dozen eggs in one 12-inch diameter cast iron frying pan, pick it up with a towel, and walk over this to the table and pour them over hash browns, and they slide right out. So it can be done. Now, that's what she used to do. But now in modern age, there's another trick you can use to season crappy cast iron. What you do is you put, most of your ovens are self-cleaning. Good. So you take these cast iron pans and you stick them in your oven and you turn on self-cleaning. That self-cleaning cycle will not only clean your oven, it will clean everything off cast iron. I don't know. I don't care how bad it is. It will clean that crap off down to the cast iron and they'll come out almost white. After they cool, whatever the cycle is on your stove, it's usually about 45 minutes. Let it cool, then bring them out, and you got to scrub them with hot, soapy water because you've got to get all the powder and residue off. You have no idea what kind of crap has been on those things, so you clean them off. Hot, soapy water. It's a two-person job. Second person's going to have a towel right now, right handy. Has to do this fast because these are going to rust fast. Wash them hot soapy water, hand them to your helper, have them dry that stuff as quickly as possible, and immediately you'll have a workspace with your oil, whatever you're going to use for seasoning. I recommend sunflower or the soy. And after this is dried, you instantly coat it down as much and as fast as you can inside and out with this oil. And you do this to all of them. Okay, now they're all going to be sitting, now if you're doing 2, 1, 3, 5, I don't care. Then they're going to be sitting on the counter, slightly warm, coated in oil. They're not seasoned yet. You just put that oil on so that it doesn't rust. What you do is you're going to have a, and it, this depends on you. I use a big cookie sheet on the bottom shelf of my stove to catch all the drips. And then what you do when you're ready to season these things, you coat them down extremely well. I mean, almost dripping. And then you put them either right side up, or you can turn them upside down to where the bottom is up, right? I mean, it depends on you. Put them all in the oven and set it about 400 degrees for an hour. At the end of an hour, just let them cool by themselves. After they're cool, take them out, look at them. Evaluate how good a job you did. If it's sufficient for you, then put them away. Put them on a shelf, hang them from the hooks on a ceiling, whatever you want to do. All right. Now, here's the other thing about seasoning cast iron. You're using an edible. You're using a food product to season these with. So if you are not going to be using your cast iron for a while, realize that you're going to have to re-season them before you can use them because that oil is going to have gone rancid. And that's the problem. So if you put these away for some later day, or if you only use cast iron when you're up camping or in mountains or something, it's going to be rancid. You're going to have to wash hot soapy water and re-season them. Not strip them down, right, like we just did, but just re-season them a little bit. Now, when you're cooking with cast iron, let me tell you a story. I was making burritos one night, and I have a cast iron tortilla pan, and the power went out. Well, we have electric stove, and the power went out, so I turned on my little electric light, and I have no heat going to the cast iron pan, but it holds heat for a long time. In fact, I had enough heat left in there to cook two tortillas. So when you're cooking with cast iron, let's say you're making yourself some hash browns and eggs, right? So you make the hash browns first, put them in another pan, cover it so it stays warm, then you make your eggs. Before you're done cooking, turn the heat off to the cast iron. That way it won't stay hot for another 30 minutes. I've done that cooking a steak, making stew, doing all kinds of stuff. When I know I'm going to be finished with that serving of whatever I'm making, I judge the temperature that I'm going to need to finish it off, and I turn off the heat to it. It's just a little trick to save power. And in some circumstances, I've had to save power. So cast iron is a phenomenal medium to use when you're cooking with. And there's Dutch ovens. There's frying pans. There's little tiny cast iron frying pans about 3 inches in diameter, perfect to cook an egg in. And then they get 4-inch, 5-inch, 6, 7, 10, 12, 14. I have one that's actually a foot and a half in diameter. And the handle to hold it is about 3 feet long. It's a cowboy thing. So we've got a bunch of cast iron. Okay, now there's a lot more information to cast iron. There's a whole bunch of recipes that I have as well. And I'm going to have them at armchairsurvivalist.com. You just click on show notes, find today's show, July 5th, and go to it. And you'll see the links to recipes and how to buy it and how to season it and history, all of this stuff. Okay, so the bottom line with cast iron, don't be cheap. Don't buy cheap crap. If you turn it over and it says 7-inch made in China, or just China, don't buy it. You're wasting your money, unless you can pick it up for a quarter. But the problem with these Chinese cast iron, they have no stabilization in the heating process in China. And these things become brittle, or they become very soft, or they don't transmit heat properly. Just get Lodge or Griswold or Wagner. There's a bunch of different ones. Costco even has some ceramic coated ones, and they hold and transmit heat beautifully. So you can do your research on it. I'll have the data for you to do so. All right, now we're going to talk about Revereware. It gets its name from Paul Revere, born in 1734, and he basically became a coppersmith, and he made things, cooking pots out of copper, all kinds of neat stuff. And I have the history of all of this, and the Revereware that we're used to, that I'm used to. I have pots and pans that were manufactured in the 40s. This is how long they'll last if you take care of them. The first Revereware came out in 1939, and they showed it off at the 1939 Chicago Houseware Show. Monstrous show, and it was an immediate success. What it is basically it's stainless steel, and the bottom of it is coated in copper. Copper transmits heat in an even manner. Stainless steel, they experimented. Let me tell you something. They experimented with all kinds of different forms of pots. Stainless steel is the only one that can handle all of the acids that you would cook with, like tomatoes and potatoes and salt. And you coat the bottom with copper, and now all of a sudden this thing transmits heat evenly and everything cooks beautifully. Now, they're stainless steel. You still have to season them. They don't tell you this anywhere, but I'm telling you this. You get them just real hot, maybe 300 degrees. You don't put them in the oven. I use steel wool. When I first get a piece of Revereware, and my grandma showed me this and my mom showed me this, people don't take care of their pots and pans. And you've seen it and I've seen it. So what we would do is, even if it was brand new, we'd take 4-aught steel wool and we'd polish the inside. Because you're going to have imperfections. You can't even see them. But you take that 4-aught steel wool and you just polish it. You don't need water. You just polish the whole inside of the stainless steel pot. You're done. And then wash it. Okay? These things, Revereware, you hand wash it. You don't put in the dishwasher. You hand wash them. Put them up to drain. Dry them. Put them away. It's that simple. There's parts you can buy for these things all over the place, you know, and they've been making these. There's like 5 different locations where Revereware has been made. And you look at the bottom of the pot. A pot, there's so many different ones. I mean, you get these ones that hold a pint and a quart and a gallon. And I actually have pots, Revereware pots, that will hold about 3 gallons of beans. This is great. Great thing. I have a crock pot at home, and it has a removable center part, and it's round, and I can take that center part out, which holds a gallon, and I set it aside, and I have a Revereware that holds 3 gallons, and I set that right directly down in there, and I do slow cooking with that. We can make a month's supply of beans in one pot, in one setting. So Revereware is great compared to stainless steel. It's lightweight. The handles, and I was telling you the parts, you can buy parts for these things. The handles are various types of ceramic or plastic. Some of them are held together with screws. Some of them are riveted together. The ones that the handles are held on with screws, you can buy replacement handles. Just go on eBay, and you'll find the replacement handles for these things. Now, when you see these, say you go to a yard sale, and this guy's got a whole bunch of Revereware there, and they got black crap coated on it, and the copper is totally coated in black crap. It's just garbage, right, to his mind. So give him a quarter for the pot. And then you take it home. And let me tell you how to clean it. First off, if you have just a normal Revereware, the copper is on the bottom, and it's discolored and dirty, and hot soapy water, you can use that. You do not want to get heavy abrasiveness onto this. You can scrape off the copper on the bottom of a Revereware. It takes a lot of effort or a lot of stupidity, but it can be done. You don't want to do that. You don't need to do that. To clean copper, now this is not just on Revereware pots, but to clean copper, use ketchup. Trust me, it'll blow your mind. You just squirt some ketchup on the pot bottom and use your hand and rub it around and rub it around and rub it around and rub it around and rinse it, and you're going to notice, oh my God, it's copper. Now, if it's pretty bad, you put the ketchup on and then you sprinkle salt on it. The salt acts as a light abrasive. And then you wipe it down like that. Just doing that's going to shine up the copper. Now, if it's real bad, and you have baked on hardened grease, I've seen some of these that are so, you would think you'd need a hammer and chisel to get the stuff off. It's not hard at all. You go get a product called Carbon Off. Carbon Off. And you take your pan, and you better do this outside and don't do it around critters. And you get a little brush, which you're going to eventually throw away. You will dip some of your brush in this goo, and it's like snot. It's slimy and thick. And you coat each area where the black is. And you just let it sit outside for a couple hours. Sometimes I just let it sit out all night. And in the morning, you come in and you start washing. Now, you're going to need your I don't like using abrasives on copper or stainless steel like this. So I use my thumbnail. And you will see as you're washing that this is scraping off. The carbon's coming right off. I mean, you can use one of those green weenies, you know, that green 3M scrubby pad. You just don't want to get any steel wool or anything that's going to scratch it. And you will find that the majority of the carbon now comes off. And what you can't get off, don't worry about it. Dry it again. And then coat it again with the Carbon Off. And you'll eventually get it all off. So the three things you use to clean these Revereware is ketchup with salt or Carbon Off. Yeah, you can take some 1/0 steel wool and scrub the hell out of it. That's not okay. You don't want to do that. The stainless steel, you can use steel wool, and I always use 4/0, 0000. That's ultra-fine steel wool. The better you take care of your cookware, the longer they're going to last for you. Now, I don't recommend using Revereware over an open flame because you're going to get soot on there that you're going to get carbon in it. You're going to get carbon on there. In an emergency situation, who cares? That's why on a fire, open flames, I use cast iron. Revereware is something that will last you the rest of your life. Now, the lids for all the pots and the pans, the little center part where you grasp to lift up the lid is a ceramic or plastic. And again, those will break, and you can buy them on eBay. The thing that I like about Revereware handles, especially the ones that are held on with screws, you will find crap under there. You will find old, rancid food. Carefully remove the screws, carefully remove the handles, clean everything really well, put it all back together. And when I do that, I always put a drop of oil, like 3M oil or that kind of gun oil or something on the screw so it screws in easy. So you don't want to over-tighten it. Remember, these handles are brittle. And the same thing with the top on the lid. You unscrew that handle, and you can clean around the area and then screw it back on lightly. Anyway, that's what I wanted to talk to you about on cookware. I will have links on where you can buy this stuff. I will have links on lots of recipes. The recipes will blow your mind. Cast iron cookware. How do you make skillet cornbread? There are so many different types of cast iron. It's astounding. The different pots and pans and gizmos you can buy in cast iron. It's just, I got nowhere to keep all this stuff. So I keep buying it, you know? And I replace pots or pans with better ones if I can. And if I see somebody who's abused cast iron or Revereware, I'll give them a quarter for that pot, and then I'll clean it and make it like new or as best it can be for something that's 40, 50 years old, and then I'll put it for sale here in the store. Now, look, my recommendation is cast iron and stainless steel, and that's it. Don't use anything else. The problem we have in this world right now is one of them is Teflon or nonstick. You're going to find these companies selling nonstick coating. And they don't want you to understand that what they're using is Teflon or something like Teflon that'll flake off eventually. This stuff, that's Teflon's in everybody's blood all over the world. It becomes toxic. See, what they have is aluminum pots or aluminum pans, and then they coat them with Teflon. Teflon's great as long as it doesn't get real, real hot or scratched. As long as it's sealed, it cooks great. It does just fine. As soon as it gets overheated, it starts off-gassing toxic fumes. And if it scratches, well, now you have the aluminum that's right there, and it's bare, and now you're cooking with aluminum. The conjecture is that aluminum adds and creates Alzheimer's disease. In the brain of every single autopsied Alzheimer patient has been aluminum. So you do not want to use aluminum in any way, shape, or form. Period. You don't want to use aluminum. You got aluminum cans with something in it. You don't drink out of the can. You pop the can and you pour it into a glass. You don't cook with aluminum at any time. And you make sure that if you go into a restaurant, they do not cook with aluminum. That's the problem with Teflon. And there's more to it than that, and someday I'll do another show on that. But you get all of these companies that say, no Teflon involved, just nonstick. Well, once you do a little bit more research, you find out that that's bogus as well. The safest thing to cook with is stainless steel or cast iron or carbon steel. Carbon steel, most professional chefs use a carbon steel pan. It's half the weight of cast iron. You have to treat it exactly like cast iron. You have to season it, but I use that also at home. I use cast iron, I use carbon steel, and I use stainless steel Revereware. I hope I gave you guys some information today. Please be aware, we're in the middle of a communist attempt to take over the United States again. There are so many things pointing to what's coming. You know, I don't need to get into it right now. But don't stick your head in any orifice or even in the sand. Pay attention to what's going on. The term is situational awareness. Be aware at all times of your situation. Be aware what's happening behind you, beside you, above you, under you, and in front of you. So if you need any of our products, Survival Enterprises, we're on Government Way in Hayden, North Idaho. Or we're at SE1, Samuel Edwards, numeral 1, SE1.us. You can call us anytime, 310-295-9686. That's 310-295-9686. Yes, it's a Beverly Hills number, but we had an office down there before, so we kept the number. I just like it, okay? Anyway, you know what products we carry. Nutritional products, a bunch of oddball stuff, too. And if you come in the store, you get to see our handmade katanas and our weaponry, other weaponry we carry, just for those of you who like to put something in your hand. So to speak. All right, so this is Kurt Wilson, the Armchair Survivalist, signing off. Keep your nose in the air and ear to the ground, as long as you're maintaining situational awareness. See you next time.